Hello and welcome to volume 45, number 50 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 12th of December 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Margaret. And in the news this week, well, unfortunately, not as much as there should have been, as due to technical issues, some of the recording was lost, so our sincere apologies. We do, however, have a fair lump of news items, plus Grapevine Extra with next week's TV from Desney, and the old news from December 1962 from Margaret. Firstly, though, we have a birthday to celebrate, so it's very best wishes for a great day on this coming Monday the 15th to Morris Hood. Have a great day, Morris. Right, time to get underway with what news we have salvaged from the bowels of the recording machine. So it's over to Margaret and Desney.
North Quay Scheme. A hugely ambitious £100 million project to transform Gotton Corner of Norfolk into a premier destination for shopping and entertainment has been unveiled. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has revealed its plans to regenerate the North Quay area of the town, which officials say will be a once-in-a-generation scheme on a scale rarely seen in the county. The project will create a retail outlet centre with 70 stores, a 120-room hotel, restaurants, housing, a multi-storey car park and an IMAX cinema doubling as a conference centre. Vauxhall Bridge will also be revamped and further improvements will be made to the public spaces. About 1,000 long-term jobs will be generated once it is opened, while a further 500 roles will be required during the construction phase. It is estimated up to 2 million people will visit every day, which council leaders say will boost the wider tourism industry. They hope more investment will flood into the town once the revamp is complete to help regenerate the railway station and the high street. The North Quay area between Haven Bridge and the station was once a key site for the town's fishing industry. More recently, the land, which sits at the mouth of the Bure where it meets the Yare, has been used for industry and housing. Much of it is derelict and the council has already purchased some of it. Officials say they are still in negotiations about acquiring the rest. The project, funded in part by a £20 million levelling up fund, has already been 8 years in the pipeline and the council hopes it could be open within 5 years. Carl Smith, Conservative leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "This incredibly exciting development will breathe new life into our town and is something we've been working towards for many years." The ambitious vision dovetails with our determination to make Great Yarmouth a thriving place to live, work and visit. North Quay's regeneration is being delivered in conjunction with Rioja Estates, which has experience creating shopping destinations throughout the UK and Europe. Giles Membry, Managing Director, said the area offers a unique opportunity due to the substantial amount of brownfield land that will be developed in close proximity to the town and major transport links. He says, "There is nothing like this in Norfolk. Our vision is to create a thriving, mixed-use quarter that celebrates the town's unique character whilst attracting new investment, new brands, new visitors and, most importantly, creating new jobs for local people." Trevor Wainwright, leader of the Labour Group, was excited about the opportunities it will offer for young people through a route to employment. He said, "We want our young people to live here, to stay and work in Yarmouth. We know at the moment a lot of youngsters leave the area.
the development will be a great incentive for people to stay and work in Yarmouth. We know at the moment a lot of youngsters leave the area. This development will be a great incentive for people to stay. Wilmot Dixon has been chosen as a developer for the project. Sheila Oxtoby, Chief Executive of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "Currently the area is not an attractive gateway to the town. This will regenerate an underutilised area combined with the Conge housing development. It will boost this part of town. We remain in negotiations with landowners and hope to secure the entire site with negotiations. So far this has been positive, but we will also use compulsory purchase powers if necessary." Mrs. Oxtoby added that Greater Anglia is already in talks with the council about how it could make improvements to the railway station to accommodate more visitors. North Quay is one of the main entrances to Yarmouth, but it has faced several years of decline. In its heyday, it was the centre of commerce and industry, with its locations next to the river providing access to trade routes for the large Quay Mill and the Fisher's Deal yards. The riverside was an important dockyard, and historic maps even showed a bowling green along the waterfront. Vauxhall Bridge, built in the 19th century, was a key getaway for the town, and once carried horse, train, tram and car, but now it is used solely as a footbridge after it shut to traffic in the 1980s. Great Yarmouth Borough Council hopes this regeneration scheme will transform the area and make it more attractive to visitors when they reach the town.
A major road will be closed for continued works to build a dual carriageway. The A47 Yarmouth Road near Norwich will be closed for 3 nights. It will be shut between Cucumber Lane Roundabout, also known as Brundle Roundabout, and Acle Roundabout. The works will be carried out on December the 15th, 16th and 17th between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. National Highways is switching the Contraflow roadworks from the westbound to the eastbound carriageway. This means drivers will eventually be able to drive both ways on the eastbound carriageway while the dualling scheme continues. A spokesman for the National Highways said, "We are upgrading the A47 between Blowfield and North Burlingham to dual carriageway to ease congestion and support economic growth in the area. This is set to cost between £90 million and £100 million. The project began in August last year. It's planned to be completed in the next 2 years.
Pembroke Avenue brand. A man has launched a new company to make sure his late mother's name is never forgotten. George Aldous from Galston rose to fame as a social media influencer and has amassed 38,000 followers on Instagram. Over the years, he has run his own makeup brand and used his platform to speak out about important topics such as drug dependency and the dangers of weight loss injections. But the 27-year-old's latest venture is a new fragrance company called Pembroke Avenue, which he started last month in memory of his mother, Tracy Paulette Alford. Mrs. Alford was diagnosed with a stage 4 blood cancer called non-Hodgkin lymphoma in November 2021, and she died just 2 months later in January 2022. Mr. Alders said she had been unwell for a long time, having been diagnosed with Crohn's disease, colitis and COPD at the age of 18. "We knew it would happen one day, but we didn't know it would happen that quickly or that it would be cancer," he shared. "When I was sitting with her in the hospital room, I said, 'I'm going to start a new company in your honour to make sure your legacy lives on. I'm proud to be her son and I want to make sure her name is never forgotten.'" Pembroke Avenue was named after the Galston Street where he grew up and his mum lived before she passed. It offers a variety of bespoke candles and fragrances to reflect Mrs. Alford's love of anything with a nice smell. The founder hopes to expand the range further over time, using her favourite scents as inspiration. He has already made several donations to a local women's charity named Feathers Futures, which he knows Mrs. Alford admired. Mr. Alders added that building the business in her honour has helped him process his loss and grieve, and thanked his father, Stephen Aldous, for his support.
Foot Clinic is calling upon its local football club in its mission to support rough sleepers ahead of Christmas. Caister Foot Care Podiatry sponsors the Caister Youth Football Club, and it's asking the young footballers to help collect toiletries to help support the homeless. Eric Dinar, co-owner of the clinic, said, "We really wanted to do something for the community. I also wanted to do something different. We're going to look after 10 people living rough. One of the main issues they have is the lack of health care. The young footballer who gathers the most toiletries will be awarded a rucksack and a football during a party at the Gate pub opposite the clinic in Caister on December the 20th. Mr. Dinar bought the clinic with his wife and former NHS worker Heather in August. She's got the expertise. It's a big venture for the two of us, and we had this great opportunity. The clinic will be at Herring House Trust in Great Yarmouth to deliver the toiletries on December the 23rd.
Owners of homes in erosion-threatened Hemsby, whose properties could be bulldozed as soon as next week, say they fear being made homeless before Christmas. Great Yarmouth Borough Council announced this week that some of the houses most at risk, a row of 11 timber-built chalets at the Marrams, could be knocked down as early as Monday, December the 15th. Simon Measures, chairman of Save Hemsby Coastline, said, "The council seems intent on pressurising people to voluntarily hand over their properties and become homeless before Christmas." A spokesman for the council previously said that officials are working closely with the owners of the properties to help them understand the risk to their homes and offer support. But Mr. Measures, who lives on the coast, said he and his neighbours feel abandoned by those in power and that the council is exerting undue pressure on vulnerable residents in the area, aiming to demolish their homes as early as possible. Pascal Rose, another Marrams resident, said, "I doubt that the officials and leaders of Three Great Yarmouth Borough Council truly grasp the meaning of the word support that they usually use. Their version of support involves merely providing people with the contact information for their housing department." Eric Forbes, 66, who has lived in the town for 3 years, said that the person in charge of the demolition project won't let us stay in it until after Christmas. "I've got other options, but there's people walking around in tears. These homes are owned by us. I've lived here 3 years. Some people have lived here 14 years. For some people, it's houses that have been passed down by generations." He said that the project manager is talking about people receiving compensation 5 years down the line. He was talking about December the 15th. He said he'd bring in the demolition squad. "We know about the situation. We know about the erosion, but it's just how it's come on so quickly. It's not yet known how many of the houses, which are now within 5 metres of the cliff edge, will be demolished. As things start, 5 are occupied, 4 are vacant holiday homes, and 2 are derelict." Carol Boys, 80, who has lived in Hemsby for 35 years, said she hoped to stay there for one last Christmas. She told the BBC, "By the way things are going at the moment, I can't see it happening. And I've got no plan B at the moment if this all goes. They've phoned me because of the bad weather, but no one's come near me and I'm left to my own devices. So I'm just going to stick it out to the end and see what happens. But we're all going to lose out down here," she added. Hemsby has already lost more than 20 homes to the sea in the last 15 years. Over the past 12 months, the village has suffered from rapid rates of erosion, as well as damage caused by storms Amy, Benjamin and Claudia. The council has said they want to avoid the risk of properties collapsing onto the beach and last-minute evacuations. Mr. Measures says, "The amount of support you get from the housing officer and the homelessness office is pretty minimal. You have to do the best they can with what they've got, but we're in the middle of a housing crisis. a number of residents feel like they're being bullied into voluntarily signing over their properties for demolition. They feel like they're being high-pressured into taking the deal offered by the council, he added. The borough council spokesman said some demolition will need to take place from the beach and during limited tidal windows, with one of those beginning next week.
Well, more full-fat news shortly, but first, a few of the shorter items with News in Brief.
The A47 was closed in both directions after a three-vehicle crash. Emergency services were called to North Burlingham at around 9:25 a.m. on Tuesday, following reports of a collision on the Norwich-bound carriageway. The road was closed between the A1270 at Postwick and the A1064 at Acle for several hours, reopening at around 1:15 p.m. A spokesman for the East of England Ambulance Service confirmed three patients were assessed at the scene and two were taken to the James Paget Hospital. A couple's bid to open a dog walking field has been refused by planners for a second time. Mr and Mrs Self had applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to change the use of a field on land near Hall Road in Martham, but planners said the proposed facility would have a significant detrimental impact on neighbours due to the potential noise from dogs as well as additional traffic. The planners said the applicants had not demonstrated there was a need for the site. The plans had faced seven objections, which raised concerns about additional traffic, loss of farming land and odours from dog waste, and also four letters of support. It was the second time the couple had sought permission to open a dog exercise park at the site. An empty Galston church could be set for a new lease of life. Community Ed CIC, a social enterprise based in Great Yarmouth, has applied to turn Bethel Gospel Hall on Pier Walk in Galston into a community education centre. They want to move their existing teaching services into the building. The proposal would not involve building work, but would change the use of the property. They believe the church has been empty and not in use for a few years. Around 10 to 30 people would be using the facility at any one time. They say they do not want to provide a place of worship, but provide a safe place for the enterprise's students and possibly the wider community to learn. A decision on the application is expected by January the 16th, 2026. Holiday bosses are planning to expand a caravan park in a Norfolk village. Paul Spriggins of Tyngdean Holiday Parks Limited has applied for planning permission to install 14 additional static caravans at Foxborough Hang in Caldecott Hall on Beckles Road in Fritton. The resort already has 166 caravans, which were built on a disused golf driving range and one of the estate's nine-hole golf courses. A decision on the bid, currently in the hands of planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, is expected by January the 20th.
An investigation has opened into the death of a mental health nursing assistant who died from a fatal head injury. Valerie Collier of Brook Avenue in Caister died at the James Paget Hospital, JPH, on November the 24th. Norfolk Coroner's Court opened an inquest into the retired 93-year-old's death, where Area Coroner Yvonne Blake gave a provisional cause of death as a subdural hematoma and aspiration pneumonia. It was also heard she injured her head and fractured her ribs during an unwitnessed fall. Ahead of a full inquest in May next year, Mrs Blake has requested statements from Miss Collier's GP, the JPH, attending paramedics, care companies and adult social services. Her family have also been invited to provide a pen portrait and a statement outlining any background or concerns they may have. More land is to be bought by the local council, so a once-in-a-generation scheme to regenerate a rundown part of town can go ahead. Great Yarmouth Borough Council hopes to purchase parcels of land for the North Quay project. An extra £500,000 will be used to secure the plots, which officials say are necessary to maximise the site's potential and to create a northern gateway. The council hopes to use £20 million from the government's Levelling Up Fund to transform the 10-acre riverside area, which was once an industrial centre. The land purchase was agreed at a recent cabinet meeting. Further details are expected to be revealed about the scheme imminently. A man is due in court next year after a JCB was used in an attempt to steal a cash machine from a Norfolk garage. Alan Smith has been charged after a digger was driven into an ATM on the forecourt of the BP service station on South Gates Road, Yarmouth, shortly before midnight on November the 26th. As officers arrived, the JCB was driven away, hitting a fuel pump and damaging vehicles along Exmouth Road. A man was then arrested on Ordnance Road. Smith, 47, of no fixed address, is due to appear at Norwich Crown Court on January the 2nd next year after being charged with a raft of offences. A busy road was closed in both directions on Tuesday evening. The A143 was shut by police due to an overturned lorry at Haddiscoe. The incident happened shortly before 8 p.m. A spokeswoman for the force has said that diversions were put in place, but that long delays were expected. Motorists were advised to avoid the area.
Well, the rest of what we have of this week's news coming up shortly after a tune from The Shadows, which gets a mention in Grapevine Extra.
A Norfolk charity is calling for action after figures show the region has underfunded mental health services in comparison with other regions. Norfolk Clubhouse said that spending in Norfolk and Waveney on the sector was 30% below the national average. It found that of 40 NHS integrated care boards in England, Norfolk ranked 26th in 2023/24, the most recent year for which figures are available, with its NHS-funded services receiving £199.4 million. This is around 30% lower than the national average of £284.6 million. June Webb, Norfolk Clubhouse founder and psychotherapist, said, "A funding gap of this size is having a direct and damaging impact on Norfolk people. People are experiencing preventable harm simply because of delayed care. Underfunding means fewer staff, longer waiting times, and less availability of key mental health support when and where it is most needed. This also has a knock-on effect on putting even more pressure on A&E services. Those waiting for professional help can access free services such as talking therapies, for which 2,835 referrals were made in Norfolk and Waveney in July this year alone. It is also possible to self-refer to talking therapies." Ms. Webb added, "In Norfolk, we are facing a mental health challenge that many rural areas struggle with, a lack of access. Expanding services alongside mobile and out-of-hours crisis teams to cover rural and coastal areas will be essential for increasing the number of ways care can be accessed. Providing mental health support in schools is already starting to be pushed in places like London, so this should continue to be pushed to rural areas as well. More consistent support at GP practices should also be considered." And while Miss Webb is calling for immediate help in the county, she said there is still a lot to be done at national level too. According to Mind's Big Mental Health Report 2024, the cost of mental ill health is £300 billion a year in England, with around 2 million people on waiting lists.
Fire crews were called to help a car stuck in floodwater as storm pram swept the UK. The car became stuck in Reedham Road, Acle, at around 8:45 a.m. on Tuesday. A Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service spokesman confirmed appliances from Sprowston and Carrow were sent to the scene to provide manual assistance. They received their stop message at 9:08 a.m. Storm Bram, designated by Met Eireann, Ireland's counterpart to the Met Office, was forecast to intensify quickly on Tuesday as it tracked northwards to the west of the UK, delivering widespread heavy rain and increasingly strong winds. People across Norfolk had been experiencing heavy rain since around 6 a.m. on Tuesday. The Environment Agency put two flood alerts in place in the area. They said that flooding could occur along the tidal River Yare from Thorpe St Andrew to Breydon Water, as well as the tidal River Bure, Ant and Thurne. Riverside areas in Brundle, Reedham, Potter Heigham, the Rocks and Boatyards and Ferry Road in Horning were all particularly at risk. Water levels were expected to remain high over the next couple of days, with drivers being urged to avoid low-lying roads near rivers which might be flooded.
Student success has put a college in the national spotlight after standout performances on a UK stage. Four students from East Coast College reached the World Skills UK National Finals in Wales, securing gold, silver and bronze medals and making it the top performing college in the East of England. Emma Fisher won gold and Mary O'Brien took silver in SFX makeup and hair for film and TV, while Jacob Myhill earned bronze in the metal fabricator category. Ella Hutchinson was named as a finalist in the beauty therapist competition. Paul Padder, principal and chief executive of East Coast College, said, "East Coast College always prides itself on developing high-quality, skilled practitioners. Our results confirm that our students are world-leading and that our teachers are amongst the best in the country. Congratulations to our finalists and medalists. We're so proud of them." The national finals are part of a competition that brings together the UK's best young talent in technical and vocational subjects. Emma said, Competing at the national final was an incredible experience. I'm grateful for the guidance and encouragement I received from my tutors, and I'm thrilled to have represented the college at this level. Winning gold has given me huge confidence as I move forward in my career. East Coast College finished fifth overall in the national medals table, highlighting its position as a leading provider of technical education and training. It achieved the highest ranking of any college in the East of England. The World Skills UK National Final is recognised as the country's leading showcase for vocational excellence, celebrating the next generation of talent across industries ranging from engineering to the creative arts.
A woman is pleading for help to save the life
of her 2-year-old dog who needs to undergo a crucial and expensive surgery. Joanna Woodrow, 59, is disabled and retired from her job as a bus driver 6 years ago. 2 years ago, she welcomed a Rottweiler puppy into her home in Great Yarmouth. Freya has become a very loyal companion, and Mrs. Woodrow said she is her reason for getting up in the morning. Last year, Freya tore a ligament in her knee, leaving her in severe pain. Ms. Woodrow said her insurance could only provide £1,000 in support, which just covered the x-rays. The surgery cost £4,200. So Ms. Woodrow has had to take out a substantial loan to front it, and she is still paying this off monthly out of her disability benefit. But just a year later, Freya tore a ligament in her other knee while doing zoomies in the garden. Mrs. Woodrow said she cannot afford to pay for the surgery again and has not found a charity that can provide any support. My last option is to surrender her, but the shelters are all full, she said. She's just whining in her crate all day in pain. If I can't help her, she'll be put down. She's only 2 and otherwise healthy. I'm at my wit's end and I can't stop crying. The pet owner has launched a GoFundMe page to ask for contributions towards the surgery. This is me swallowing my pride, she shared. I never asked anyone for anything, but I am desperate and I can't think what else to do. The GoFundMe currently stands at £1,800. The tiny Broadland community of Brunstead near Stalham uniquely now has 2 village signs. The original sign was returned to farmer Alan Beck by a North Lincolnshire specialist tool restorer, Andy Whitmell, at the weekend celebration. It was thanks to Mr. Whitmell, who had bought the Brunstead sign for £80 at a Runway Monday sale on the Nottingham and Newmark showground in September last year. With help from Humberside Police and Norfolk Constabulary, Mr. Whitmell tracked down the original owner and brought the sign from his Grimsby home. Mr. Beck, who had made the original sign with near neighbour Patrick Ames in 1991, erected it on the private drive to the family's farm and St. Peter's Church. It was a distinctive feature on the Stalham to Walcott Road and was stolen in July 2018. On that same evening, another sign was taken from Brian and Janet Philby's Grove Farm, Fellbrig, near Cromer. It featured the farm's pedigree Simmental cattle in metalwork and has never been recovered. Mr. Beck of Orchard Farm then made a copy of the sign, which was named after the former village pub, the Brumstead Drag Rake. The metal design was cut out thanks to Philip Crane of Hugh Crane and Sons of Upton and Neil Sands of Sands Agricultural Machinery, now of Catfield. This replacement sign, featuring a farm worker smoking a pipe, was unveiled in July 2019. Mr. Beck was delighted to have the original sign back. I'm so grateful for Mr. Whitmell for bringing the sign back. We thought we'd lost it forever. But now we have 2 special signs putting Brunstead on the map twice. Mr. Whitmell runs The Workshop, a business specialising in repairing vintage hand tools, and Mr. Beck's family have farmed at Hall Farm next to the medieval church since 1919. Almost half the 65-strong population of Brunstead watched the return of the village sign. And now a long-running bid to build a home in the Norfolk countryside has been thrown out for a third time. Broadland councillors have ruled that the countryside plot near North Burlingham remains too remote and goes against major planning policies. The latest dismissal for the self-build home follows an initial rejection in 2022, followed by an appeal dismissed in 2023. The applicants, Mr. and Mrs. Trett, have argued that the bungalow fully reflects the character of the area and would deliver a new home at a time of housing shortfall. However, planning officers warned that the site, in open countryside between Blowfield, Lingwood and North Burlingham, is well outside any defined settlement boundary. With no local services, public transport or safe walking routes, they said that future occupants would inevitably rely on cars for daily travel. They argued this conflicted with aims to limit car-led development and ambitions to prioritise sustainable development. There had also been 7 objections from locals who pointed to the disruption the development would have on the narrow rural roads and the various forms of wildlife in the area. Councillors sided with officer recommendations and refused the plans.
Well, that's all we have of the news this week, so it's welcome to Grapevine Extra. Coming up, Disney with the week's TV, after Margaret looks back to December 1962.
News taken from the Mercury, December 1962. Just some bits and pieces. Entertainment first. The Regent was showing The Wild and the Willing with Virginia Maskell and Ian McShane. Pat Boone in the main attraction at the Regal, and in the quiet backwaters of Galston, the good old collie had Naked as Nature Intended with Pamela Green. In case there was any violence on the streets because of these risque titles, the new police station opened its doors for the first time on the corner of the Conge and Howard Street. And there was just one baby born at the General Hospital on Christmas Day, Deborah Reed, to Mrs. Pamela Reed of Spence Avenue, Galston. She was presented with a premium bond. And shopping, well, good old Arnold's in 1962. You could buy a double nylon shorty nighty for 31 and 6p. You could choose from a large range of dolls starting at 28 and 6p. A chemistry set for 21 shillings and Old Spice gift sets from 35 shillings. Platten's had men's pyjamas from 24 and 6p. Slippers at 27 and 6p. And ladies' stockings 3 and 11p a pair. And back to the entertainment again. You could go to the carnival night on Christmas Eve at the Floral Hall, dance the night away with Gordon Edwards' bands, ticket 6 shillings. And who can remember the sparkling ball that lit up the dance floor? I can, sorry. And there were late buses too. There was also a boxing night special, Jingle Bell Rock and Twist Ball. The Shrublands Panto was Beauty and the Beast, and that was very well received. The part of Beauty was played by Bridget Green, sadly no longer with us, The Beast by Patricia Bear, other parts Jock Campbell, John Woods, Margaret Campbell, Morris Raven and Robert Tyler. The Gilbert and Sullivan Society, under the directorship of Bernard Gooch, staged Patience at the Town Hall. And those taking part were John Bales, Robert Bordley, Paula Smith, Helen Leggett, William Webb and David Buchan. And talking of the late buses from the Floral Hall, who can remember standing in the freezing cold in the bus shelter? I can. It was a long way back to Newtown if I missed the blue bus back to the depot. Now, another headline that caught my eye was White Christmas came on Boxing Day. Yarmouth having missed a White Christmas, the festival was ushered in by bitter winds on Christmas Eve. A light sprinkling of snow Christmas Day evening but it began to snow heavily on Boxing Day morning, when parts of the River Yare alongside Caister Road froze over. And what were the hit tunes of December 1962? It's Elvis Presley singing Return to Sender, Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, Brenda Lee, and Dance On by the Shadows, Oh My Lost Youth. And to end, my favourite topic, yes, the good old Christmas spirit, purely medicinal to keep out the cold. Bacs were selling half bottles of Amontillado sherry at 8 shillings, London gin 35 shillings, and Hennecke's three-star brandy at 43 and fourpence. Cheers, everybody, and I'd like to wish you all now a happy Christmas and a good new year. And if 2025 hasn't been a good year for you, I hope 2026 is much better. Happy Christmas, everyone.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung away, you can see it. The couple tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, lit the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling. You will get a sentimental feeling when you hear voices singing, let's be jolly, set the halls with boughs of holly. Rocking around the Christmas tree, have a happy holiday. Everyone dancing merrily in the new old-fashioned way. The Christmas tree, have a happy holiday. Everyone dancing merrily in the neat old-fashioned way.
Now, I've got some television news to read to you. There are so many Christmas programmes of all types, but I've just picked out a mixed bag of three. And the first one is A Mary Berry Christmas, which is on Wednesday the 17th of December on BBC One at 9 p.m. And with Dame Mary Berry around, we know there's going to be plenty of delicious food being made. But in this programme, she's joined by some of her celebrity friends to cook and to share some Christmas traditions. She and the actor Alison Steadman admire the twinkling lights at RHS Wisley before taking Harry Akins Arete, who's a former GB athlete turned gladiator and then also turned his talents to dancing in this season's Strictly Come Dancing, to watch The Snowman in the West End, where Mary Berry also goes to Windsor Great Park with Zoe Ball. And there she's going to choose a Christmas tree, and she promises as a special reason for going there and that it couldn't have been more fun. And, of course, the food. A new way with pigs in blankets, fillet of beef with port sauce, and a fabulous cherry and lemon meal foy pudding. And after this, you'll begin to feel really Christmassy. And the next one on this list is Steve Backshall's Royal Arctic Challenge, which is on Thursday, the 18th of December at 8:30 p.m. on ITV1 or ITVX. And this programme is 50 years after the future King Charles's unprecedented visit to the Arctic, which helped shape his passion for the environment. Steve Backshall retraces his steps to see how much has changed. after an arduous and bone-chilling search for polar bears, the top of his must-see list, an emotional Steve finally spots a mother feeding two cubs. And like the adventurous Prince Charles, he tries dog sledding and diving under the ice and talking to Indigenous people and experts about the challenges that they face. Now global warming has catastrophically raised the temperature in the Arctic by 2 degrees since the royal visit. And in a very friendly chat between the King and Mr. Backshaw before the trip, King Charles mentions that this means that the seasons are getting shorter, which makes the animals' natural rhythms of behaviour change. And the King explains that what really infuriates him most is our inability to accept how humans and nature are so inextricably linked that everything we do affects our planet. And finally, the third one is the BBC Sports Personality of the Year, which takes place on the BBC, BBC One, on Thursday, the 18th of December, from 7 p.m. Gabby Logan, Claire Balding and Alex Scott host the live coverage of the Sports Personality of the Year from Salford, and they review the key sporting moments of the year and prepare to crown the successor to Keely Hodgkinson. She was last year's Olympic 800 metres champion and last year's winner. And those in with a chance this year are probably England and Arsenal footballer Chloe Kelly, because, again, England won the Euros, and golfer Rory McIlroy, who won the Masters at Augusta this year, Formula One champion Lando Norris, who got the points he required last weekend, and even the still very young Luke Littler, who at the age of 17 won the World's Darts Championships early in the year, and his recent victory in the Grand Slam of Darts made him the youngest ever PDC World Number One. And, by the way, he hit his first 180 at the age of 6. Can you believe it? And live sport this week, if you're really still interested in sport at this cold time of year, the Ashes might warm you up, or they might warm you up by getting you enraged at how badly England have been doing in the first two. But this is the third Ashes test, and it's in Adelaide. And you can see it on TNT Sports from Tuesday at 11 p.m. if you want to stay up late and watch. Or you can listen to it on Radio 5 Live Sports Extra from 11:30 p.m. The only other live sport that I've got here to mention is the EFL Cup quarterfinals, the football that is, obviously. And it's Newcastle United versus Fulham. And it's on Wednesday at 7:30. And it's on ITV1 or ITVX.
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week's recording will be our Christmas edition, featuring a cast of thousands. That is, our Grapevine readers all at once. So, we look forward to your company for that. But in the meantime, we wish you a good pre-Christmas week and hope that you stay safe and well. So from everyone here at Grapevine, as usual, it's bye for now.